Good morning. Welcome to the Faith Debate on News Radio 930 WFMD. We're so pleased that you're spending part of your valuable time with us today. I'm Troy Skinner on News Radio 930 WFMD, also online at householdoffaithinchrist.com. Joined this week by David Forsey. He's pastor of a house church that meets in a variety of locations based on the week, not a variety of locations all at once. And he wanted me to clarify it in the past a few times, so I'm clarifying that. He's not a multi-campus house church, but he kind of sort of is, but not the way you think. Anyway, and Daniel Rasby is also on the show. You can find him and their ministry online at conqueredbylove.org. And he co-pastors a church called The Church That Meets at Imran's House. If you were listening last week, you heard us talking about marriage questions and whether pastors should officiate the ceremony. And we talked about how we were going to get into this week whether or not only married men can serve as pastors. And we're going to just start right on that topic until in between shows we realize there's a lot more to be said about pastors officiating wedding ceremonies. And so maybe we'll try to, you know, put a bow on some of those thoughts. So practically speaking, I can say this. I have been asked to officiate weddings in the past, and I have. I have said no, by the way, as well. Or after talking, they asked me, and then after talking to me, they said no. Because I said, well, I think the most valuable thing I can bring to the table for you is the premarital counseling. I'd be happy to officiate your ceremony, but I really feel like you guys should spend some time, you know, in some serious study about what it is you're getting into, and I think I can help you facilitate that and lead that. And they were just weren't receptive. And I said, well, then I'm not so sure I'm real comfortable moving forward with this. So,
and yeah, there's a number of pastors I know that would refuse to officiate until they've personally done the counseling sessions, a number of sessions with the couple.
Now I waffle on that a little bit because I wonder, is that biblical? If a man and a woman come to you and say, hey, we want to get married, is it biblical, is it reasonably biblical to say, well, yes, but only if you jump through these hoops first? So
Right. Well, see, that's the thing is, I don't think as a pastor, your role is to give approval or blessing on the marriage. I think that's the family. And so the question came up in between recordings here, because it's a good segue, I think. What do you do, though, even if we accept the premise? And I'm not sure we all agree with that premise, but let's just say we do all agree with the premise that it really needs to be the fathers and the families that are giving this their blessing and approval and organizing this whole thing. Well, what happens when you get a 50-year-old or a 60-year-old that wants to get married, and maybe his parents are dead, maybe he doesn't even have much of a family at all, or maybe it's somebody that's the only one saved in their family, and their family doesn't want anything to do with them, and then maybe a little younger, but it's still there's no family involvement, and there will not be any family involvement. That's definite, and there's no going back from that. So now what do you do? And my answer would be, well, look at what happened in the Bible. Look at Isaac. He was going to go get a wife, and he didn't have his father there involved. He said, I'm going to go get a wife. He sent servant out, and the servant went and said, hey, here's a good wife. Let's bring her back. And Isaac saw her, took her into his tent. They're married. Like, that's it. That's all that's required, is publicly living as a married couple is the only thing biblically that's required to be married. And I think that's where it comes down to. And so I would counsel, if I got asked, I think, yeah, some middle-aged person or younger but no family involvement type of person and no possibility of reconciling, even if maybe attempts have been made and there's no possibility. So then I would probably counsel them, well, you too need to make a public profession of marriage, and I would suggest that you make a big celebration and invite a lot of people and say, we're going to have a party, we're married now. And if you need to get some legal document that says you're married too, to get some tax benefits or whatever, sure, go for it, but that's not the marriage. The marriage is you telling all your family and friends, we are married. Because there's a number of people that live together, and even Jesus said, see people say, well, if you're cohabitating, isn't that the same thing? Well, Jesus said to the woman at the well, you're living with somebody you're not even married to. So clearly she wasn't making some kind of, public profession of, like, this is my husband. So I think that's where I would fall on that category, and maybe you guys can disagree or hopefully disagree.
That's an interesting thought there, though, thinking about the woman at the well, Daniel, because, according to your understanding of Eastern marriage practice and even during biblical times, that might shed some, maybe the woman at the well wasn't actually maybe they weren't living as if they were married. Jesus would have known that.
Well, so. Right, and that's what I'm, and that's kind of what I'm getting at. I mean, he says, "Look, you've," and she said, "I have no husband." So clearly, she's not professing to be married. And he's like, "Well, yeah, you have had five husbands, and this guy's not even your husband, and you agree with that." So yeah, that's true. Thank you for being honest with me. Basically, not in so many words, but that's what he was saying. And so I think there was understood at the time. There's a difference between living together as a married couple and then just happening to be in sin. And she was admitting that she was not married and not treating it like a marriage. So it's more like a prostitution, I guess, in that case. But I would encourage, if you're going to be married, then that needs to be a public profession. You don't need to put it on national television or anything, but it needs to be reasonably published that you're married.
Your family, your friends should know. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So in that scenario, I'm trying to think of practical, how this would play out practically speaking. You know, you're out in the business world, you're out in the real world, rescuing trees and all that sort of stuff, saving the environment.
Yeah, mine's only just fake numbers on a screen. His is the real world, the trees. Yeah.
But you run across different people and they find out that, oh, you're pastoring a church. Actually, I'm going to make an honest woman out of my girlfriend. We want to get married. Would you officiate? You have no reason to think that either one. In fact, you have lots of reason to think neither one of them is actually a Christian. Would you officiate, or would you not officiate, but you might say, well, get me your documents, I'll sign them for you so you can be, on the up and up with the government or get your tax benefits. Would you draw a line there as a pastor?
I would say use it as an opportunity to explain the gospel and how marriage is and what marriage is and what it does. And because I don't see anything unbiblical about two people who are not followers of God becoming married to each other, other than the fact that they're not followers of God. That's the main thing.
Right. Yeah.
I don't have a problem with that necessarily, but because I'm not seen as doing it in a church setting. There's a lot of pastors that would say, well, I would only officiate for a member of my church that's in good standing, that I've done the counseling. And honestly, a lot of them are now adding these restrictions that they didn't have before because they don't want to get caught in the trap of, well, you said you marry anybody, so what about me and my other male friend that are going to get married.
Right, yeah.
And then you say no, now you get all these lawsuits, and a lot of people are afraid of that.
Out of that sticky wicket, I guess, if you're not actually officiating the weddings in this church building at all, ever. Right? Yeah. It's just the families come together and do what they're going to do. The importance of the family, particularly in the point of view that David had more time to advocate strongly last week and is now alluding to again this week, what about eloping? Is that are they being sinful? Is that unbiblical because they're excluding the family?
No, I think Daniel would say that's fine as long as they come back and tell everybody, hey, we're married now. it's not like the ideal situation would be.
I mean,
both families
usually
are fully involved. And eloping, it's a very big thing.
Eloping implies that the family does not approve of this union.
That's true. Yeah,
and sometimes the family doesn't actually know better, especially particularly if there's maybe an unbelieving family or some other history or background that's unique in your situation. But many, and if not most times, your parents do have a lot more wisdom and experience to share, and their counsel should be extremely valuable. But I understand in many cases it doesn't work out. So
eloping seems to be used a lot these days to refer to older people.
Yeah, well, these days also eloping tends to be because we don't want to spend money on a big wedding ceremony, or we don't have the money for that.
Right.
We'd rather use money for other things if we did have it.
Yeah.
So we want to just get it over with. And that's kind of what I'm saying. Hey, you don't have to have a big, buy an expensive wedding dress and rent out a big place and ship everybody in and then serve, this nice plate of dinner. You don't have to do that. You could gather all your friends together and say, hey, by the way, me and my girlfriend, we got married last night. It's like, okay, great. Now that would be a wedding in my opinion. Now the bigger of a celebration you can make, the better it is. I think that's God honoring, but it doesn't have to be as big of a deal as and I think you were talking about this, Troy, last week, where people make it into such a clinical thing, almost procedural. It has to be everything, every dot, every I has to be dotted, every T has to be crossed. This day has to go 100% perfect. Otherwise, the bride's life is ruined. And that's not really, I think, a biblical way of thinking of it.
Yeah, I used to playfully joke with my daughter before she got married, obviously. I said, eloping can be very romantic. And that was my playful way of saying, man, this wedding's going to be expensive, isn't it?
Now, Middle Eastern weddings can be really expensive. It's not uncommon for people to spend six figures or more on a wedding ceremony. That's not a destination wedding. They can be really big because you are often inviting not just your family, like all of your family and all of your friends and acquaintances, and feeding them for multiple days and so on. So it can get very expensive, but it is a very happy time. It's a very celebratory time, and I like to think that it'll only be magnified an infinite time more when Christ comes to get us for the actual wedding ceremony that we're all preparing for.
The bigger the party, the better.
Yeah.
You know, just don't have the party for the wrong reasons.
Yes.
So the one telling you not to have the party for the wrong reasons is David Forsey. The one saying yes is Daniel Rasby. I'm Troy Skinner. This is the Faith Debate on News Radio 930 WFMD. And so,
are we finally getting to your controversial topic?
Let's pivot. So last week I asked the question, can only married men serve as pastors? And Daniel said yes.
End of discussion.
And then that was the end of the show. So let me turn to...
So let's go to the next topic now.
Let me turn to David Forsey here. Can only married men serve as pastors? You say yes or no?
I say that's the ideal situation.
It's the ideal situation.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, I'm...
But suboptimal is okay. It's just suboptimal.
Well,
I don't agree with either one of you.
I think a lot of it is... I think it depends on a lot of things. One, I think, like, I want to know what Daniel means when he says a married man. Like, we need to define that. Like, currently married, you know?
Ever been married?
Ever been married?
Like his wife died?
Only once married, you know? Like,
okay, so are there some clarifying caveats that need to be thrown
well,
in?
Well, that's interesting, because, and I think we should probably bring a Mennonite pastor on here and hear what they have to say about the subject, because they're going to have a very strict definition of marriage, of what qualifies as being married, and divorce is not an option and all that. I'll just take it back to the scripture. There is two very clear lists of qualifications for being a bishop or elder, and both of them, as far as I remember, clearly state must be the husband of one wife. So I don't know any other way to read that other than must be married.
Currently
and not to more than one woman. I mean, because and this goes back. I mean, we mentioned.
I mean, the way that he runs his household also is important. So should he be a married man who has children who are walking faithfully?
I think his children that he does have should be in control. I think that's not as specific in the wording there, but I do think I will be more on your side of it's ideal if he also has children that are in subjection.
Right.
If he has children, they are in subjection.
Right.
I mean, we talked about briefly on the show a few months ago, somebody brought up polygamy and whether there's any teaching in the Bible about that. And we kind of all agreed that whether you could point to a specific verse, it's very clear that every single time anybody tries it, it ends very badly. And I think but the scripture does say, and it also said this about kings. Kings do not multiply wives to yourself or whatever.
Right.
So same thing in the New Testament. The leaders, the elders, need to exemplify what's a godly life, and one of those things is to have one wife. And I think that for that reason, Paul was not and would not be qualified to be an elder.
Hmm.
So I think he disqualified himself by writing that list, and he would not be an elder of a church. He was called himself an apostle. He could be an evangelist. He could preach. He could do all sorts of things. He can teach and exhort and be used mightily for the kingdom. But to pastor or elder, be an elder of a local church, I think he will be disqualified.
Because he was not married.
By his own, yep. Now, I actually personally believe that Paul was married and then his wife died. Or potentially left him because he became a Christian.
Sure.
Because I find it very odd that that such an honorable Pharisee, the son of a Pharisee from a good family and very well educated, would not have gotten himself a wife by the time he was, you know, old enough to be able to do the things he was doing. So I find it very unusual that he would not have been married ever in his life. So if you want to make the argument that, well, he was married once, therefore he's qualified, I think that could be. He was not married at the time when he was writing some of these books.
If you were to apply that same logic, though,
mm-hmm.
couldn't you make the same argument about Jesus? You find it very odd that a man in his early 30s, as respected as he was as a rabbi, a teacher of God's truth, wouldn't have had a wife and family? Right? I think we got to be careful.
That's true.
to go beyond that. Here's the passage, or one of the passages.
Well, that's why I don't know. There's nothing in the Bible that says Paul was for sure married. I just right. assume he was, and I assume Jesus was not because he was God. But there's a lot of things Jesus did not do that men do.
There's a couple of key places people would go on this subject, and Daniel alluded to it, but let's just read it real quick, this one anyway. First, this is from 1 Timothy chapter 3, beginning with verse 1. It's a trustworthy saying, if any man aspires to the office of overseer, that would be the pastor, the elder, the under-shepherd, he desires a good work. An overseer then must be above reproach, the husband of one wife, temperate, sensible, respectable, hospitable, able to teach, not addicted to wine or pugnacious, but considerate, peaceable, free from the love of money, leading his own household well, having his children in submission with all dignity. But if a man does not know how to lead his own household, how will he take care of the church of God? And not a new convert, so that he will not become where's the line here? Conceited and fall into the condemnation of the devil, and he must have a good reputation with those outside the church so that he will not fall into reproach and the snare of the devil. And then it goes on to talking about deacons and that sort of thing. So that's one of the key passages, and it does say, right, the husband of one wife, but to David's point, it also says having his children in submission with all dignity. So again, if we're going to be intellectually consistent, we almost have to say that he would have to have children, it seems to me. I think in answer to the, I don't know if it was meant to be a rhetorical question or if it was just a comment, I can't remember if it was a comment or a question, but Daniel said, I don't know any other way. How what other way would you understand those words? And not to be flippant, but the same way I would understand any particular verse in the Bible within the scope of the full context of the Holy Canon.
Sure.
And so within that fuller context, I start to think of, okay, well, how do we understand what is meant by that? I would take it to mean, clearly, no polygamy. You can't have, like, a bunch of sister wives running around, because I think that's probably
and
what
that fits,
said here.
And that fits with the commandment to kings in the Old Testament about kings should not multiply wives or horses, I think it says to themselves.
Or gold.
Yeah.
So
does not repeat the gold and the horses in this.
So I think that's the point, because we start to get into some really interesting conundrums if we try to make it something other than that point. So this is where my view, I'm not even sure that it's, what was the word you used? Not ideal, optimal. David said that it's the optimal. I'm like, well, I don't know. If somebody's been given the gift of singleness by God, has he now been excluded from being a pastor? I mean, Paul seems to make it sound like the gift of singleness is, like, possibly optimal. And yet that person can't be it. So I'm not even sure it's optimal. And what happens if the guy's a great pastor and his wife dies? Well, now he's no longer the husband of one wife because she's dead. Like, well, is he all of a sudden
I think
defrocked?
I think it is optimal for a couple of different reasons. Because he can be observed in his life, right? In his marriage, in his fatherhood.
In a leadership role.
Right. Yeah. And so you can... You can vet him much better.
It's
that
kind of
way.
Like the verse that he is faithful in least, more will be given, right? When you're faithful in the little things, and God gives you more.
Yeah, and then also the majority of other men that he's going to be pastoring are most likely going to have wives or a wife, right, and children, and so for him to set an example. For him to, you know, in life, in the way that he lives, for him to then also give counsel, right? He will be much better equipped for that if he is married and has children, and so that's that's why I think it's more optimal.
I see value in that, but the person who's never been married has a better perspective on how to give counsel to those who aren't married. And maybe never will be married. And so, right, because now he's run the risk of running smack dab into the wall epistemology. Like, you only have a special knowledge if you've lived that reality.
Everybody has been not married at some point.
Troy makes
there.
A good point, though. That's the expert fallacy that the left in this country has really pushed in recent years is, you know, well, you don't know my experience. You've never been such and such, and so you can't, you're not a woman. You can't speak about abortion. Well, you're not this, that sort of thing.
Yeah, but I mean, to some degree, that's You know, so yes, so that is a fallacy, but there's a fallacy on the other side that says, well, I can always tell you what the right thing is, even if I'm not doing it, right? Like, I can have a lot of wives and my children can be all disordered, and I can still preach the truth from the scripture.
I mean, clearly,
right?
Solomon wrote some pretty good Proverbs while he had 700 wives.
Right.
So that would kind of be part of that fallacy.
But that's why I think that it's not a fallacy to say, if Paul says, married, his household is in order, okay, why? Why does he say that? What is the reason that that's in there?
I think the list that we're given there, those are basically the things you should look for in a Christian. The Christian shouldn't be polygamous. The Christian should be faithful to, right? The Christian man should be faithful to one wife. He should have his house in order. His children should be basically well-behaved. Right. He should have a good reputation. And the, right?
Yeah, but why does it say, but then why does it say if a man desires the office of a bishop, he should be X, Y, and Z? It doesn't say if a man desires to be saved, he should be this. Or if a man is saved, he will end up looking like this. It says if you want to be a bishop or an elder, if you desire to be that. So it's almost like this person's applying for the job, right?
Well, it's just saying if someone aspires to the office, they desire a good work. So it's a good thing to want to do this. Be careful what you wish for, but it's a good thing, right? And then verse 2, an overseer then must be above reproach. So basically, I think it's one way of understanding is the overseer must be a mature Christian. That's kind of what's described here.
One who sets an example, is able to set an example of what a mature Christian looks like.
And to Daniel's point before, I don't think, personally, I don't think Paul was married ever, and we're given no reason in Scripture to know for sure that he was. And so, just for the sake of argument, if he was not married, then Paul would be disqualified from ever being an overseer based on his own letter to Timothy. Like, that doesn't make sense to me. And in his humanity, Christ, I'm firmly convinced, was not married, didn't have children.
No Da Vinci Code here.
And so he's the shepherd. The pastors are merely under shepherds. So the shepherd is disqualified from shepherding.
Well, Jesus also only had one wife.
Jesus?
Spiritually speaking.
Uh-huh.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
But he did. And
so,
he does.
But in,
so he modeled the marriage relationship.
But in his humanity, he didn't, right? In his divinity, he does, but in his humanity.
But on earth here, he was not leading the church for the first 33 years. He does now.
Yeah. Jesus is a special case.
Yeah, right. No, but yes. Yeah, so, that's adds a whole lot of complicating factors, but it's a rhetorical point. But Paul's a less charged point that makes the similar point. So they basically make sure the overseer is a mature, solid, rock solid, goes out of the way to say not a recent convert, right? A long standing, every reason to believe that they are the real deal, they're qualified to be an overseer. I think that's the point.
Yeah, I mean, yes, I think, yeah, I mean, I.
And because of that point and the fact that it's all about leading the family and having one wife and all those sorts of things, I think it precludes women from being a pastor. Right? No woman's going to have just one wife. No woman's she's not the head of her family. The husband is.
Right. Well, but then you're putting a lot of weight on that, on the wife part again. Like, okay. So...
Right.
So having,
I would say
a
if you
wife
don't,
is important.
If you don't believe it's required.
Able to teach, and women aren't supposed to be teaching the men.
But it's down the line. Right, but if you're going to say, well, it's not all that important for the man to be married, then how can you use that same passage to say that the woman can't be the elder? Because if that's not one of the important factors, she could be a mature Christian too.
Yeah, I wouldn't center my argument on women can't be pastors on this verse. I'm saying this would be a supporting passage. I mean, there are passages that say very specifically that women should not be teaching and having oversight and authority over the men in the church. And so I would go to there first. And then even a passage like this then helps to undergird and support that by extension. Like, this isn't the centerpiece of the argument, but it helps.
I was trying to
segue into something we were hoping to talk about today.
He needs to be a mature believer, but he has to demonstrate that he is good at overseeing. And how are you? I mean, maybe is he going to demonstrate that through owning a business and having employees that he treats fairly and reasonably? You know, so I think part of the key, again, yeah, and not a new believer, right? So all of these are saying, you know, like, he's demonstrating that he can do it. He's demonstrating that he has done it already in his own personal life, in his household.
And that's going to be the last word. We are plumb out of time for this episode. That's David Forsey. The other voice you heard today is Daniel Rasby. I'm Troy Skinner. This is The Faith Debate on News Radio 930 WFMD. Find us online at WFMD.com or householdoffaithinchrist.com. We'll continue with similar topics next week. I got to go through my notes and see what we covered and didn't cover because we're way off what we originally planned to be doing here. So we'll figure that all out within the next 167 and a half hours. Till then, God bless.